You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Welcome to the latest podcast from the Foundational Questions Institute. In this edition, we're taking a more contemplative slant by featuring some poetry about physics, mathematics, and the people who work on them, along with our usual mix of recent research in fundamental physics.
Yes, indeed, we are taking a more contemplative slant, because I recently visited Penn State University, where I had the pleasure of meeting Emily Grossholtz, a philosopher of mathematics, science, and other subjects at the university. She's also a poet and has written a number of pieces inspired by the history of physics, by modern research, and also by the sociology of science. So, we thought we would share a few of them with you now. The first one we'll listen to was inspired by a meeting with mathematician Benoit Mandelbrot, who developed fractal geometry. Here's Grossholtz, who begins by explaining the thinking behind her poem, In Praise of Fractals.
I wrote this poem, In Praise of Fractals, because I was invited to be part of an event with Benoit Mandelbrot. Quite a few years ago, I was invited by the chemist and poet, Roald Hoffman, and the event was very interesting, but I felt that I should write something for it. So I read through The Fractal Geometry of Nature by Mandelbrot, which was published in 1983, and then I took some of the ideas and vocabulary and I wrote this poem. In Praise of Fractals. Euclid's geometry cannot describe, nor Apollonius, the shape of mountains, puddles, clouds, peninsulas, or trees. Clouds are never spheres, nor mountains cones, nor ponderosa pines. Bark is not smooth, and where the land and sea so variously lie upon each other and lightly kiss is no hyperbola. Compared with Euclid's elementary forms, nature, loosening her hair, exhibits patterns, sweetly disarrayed, afloat, uncombed, not simply of a higher degree, n, but rather of an altogether different level of complexity. The number of the scales of distances describing her is almost infinite. How shall we study the morphology of the amorphous? Mandelbrot solved the conundrum by inventing fractals. A lineage of shapes fretted by chance, whose regularities are all statistical, like Brownian motion, whose fine configurations turn out to be the same at every scale. Some fractal sets are curves, space-filling curves, or complex surfaces. Others are wholly disconnected dusts. Others are just too odd to have a name. Poincaré once observed, "There may be questions that we choose to ask, but others ask themselves, sometimes for centuries, while no one listens. Questions that ask themselves without repose may come to rest at last in someone's mind. So Mandelbrot, in time, designed his fractal brood to be admired, not merely for its formal elegance as mathematical structure, but power to interpret, curl by curl, nature's coiffure of molecules and mountains." What gentle revolution of ideas disjoins the 19th century from ours? Cantor's set of nested missing thirds, piano's curve of fractional dimension. Mandelbrot's fractals counter the old rule of simple continuity, domesticating what short-sightedly was once considered monstrous. Nature embraces monsters as her own, encouraging the pensive mathematician to find anomaly inherent in the creatures all around us. The masters of infinity, Cantor, Peano, Hausdorff, and Lebesgue, discovered sets not in the end transcendent, but immanent, Spinoza's darling cause. Imagination shoots the breeze with nature, and what they speak, mathematics, as they flirt, reveals itself surprisingly effective in science. A wrought gift we don't deserve or seek or understand. So let us just be grateful and hope that it goes on, although our joy is always balanced by our bafflement.
That was poet and philosopher Emily Grossholtz. We'll be hearing more of her poems throughout the podcast. Which brings us back to poet and philosopher Emily Grossholtz, who has been looking back at Isaac Newton's work on optics and the reaction to it by the German writer Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Here's Grossholtz introducing her poem, The Dissolution of the Rainbow.
In the past few decades, I've actually worked quite a bit on Newton in Newton's Principia and Newton's physics and the way in which mathematics and metaphysics and physics interact to produce that great work. But I've also, on the side, done a bit of work on his optics because there's some interesting mathematics in his optics. And then I came to realize that there was a great controversy, in retrospect, between Newton and Goethe. Goethe, in his Farbenlehre, the theory of colors, really gives Newton a hard time, a century later. Goethe wrote, "By an extraordinary combination of circumstances, the theory of colors has been drawn into the province and before the tribunal of the mathematician, a tribunal to which it cannot be said to be amenable." So I read about that controversy, and I had some sympathy on both sides. And so the result was this poem, The Dissolution of the Rainbow. A cut glass chandelier dangled above the desk where Newton read and wrote. All morning, spectral dragons fought, mocked him, and made love across the white wall opposite, flashed their blue and sea-green scales, the fur of tiny fires, a glittering red eyelight. Then one day they suddenly fled and no longer were. Rising in impatience, strangely lit by reason, the philosopher undid, prism by prism, the trembling chandelier to run her now constrained and broken offspring through a maze of barriers. The light went through its paces, but the dragons disappeared. What remains, Sir Isaac quantified, teaching nature not to sing her sweeter variations, but in one low tone, geometry, to answer him. Although white light is manifold, a mixture, so he found, of different rays, each ray could be identified, in essence, with its angle of refraction. This was the only origin of colors, color then reduced to numbering. The dragons lapsed to silence, mortified, curled up and dry as worms a child has questioned in the fire of curiosity and left behind. When Newton set his prism work aside, he wiped his hands and wrote on creamy paper long and elegant formulae, a shadow of the sensuous retained in his illuminating study, even that much immaterial. Yet he sometimes noticed, later on, how his sines and cosines lay across the paper like dark skeletons of dragon, couchant, rampant, as the full, proud curve of the integral.
Thank you again to Emily Grossholtz for reading her poem, The Dissolution of the Rainbow.
Now you might wonder how physicists feel in the face of unanswerable questions, such as those that ICERT is attempting to uncover, or how cosmologists deal with theories about the early universe, quantum gravity, and inflation that are as yet untestable, until Paruanu and others come up with analogs in the lab to provide some experiments to help, that is. But that's the topic of our final piece from Emily Grossholtz. Here she is, once more, describing the inspiration behind her poem, Among Cosmologists.
One of my colleagues here at the Center for Fundamental Theory at the Institute for Gravitation in the Cosmos is Shara Shandera. And when she was being interviewed for the job here, I came to her lecture and I went out to dinner with her, and she said a couple of very interesting things. And I thought about them afterwards. I wrote them down, and then they turned into a poem. So this poem is called Among Cosmologists. Breathlessly, with a shrug and a vague gesture, empty hand palm up, collecting something from empty space that is, by all accounts, not empty, rather like the four-dimensional surface of an n-dimensional cauldron, where bubbles form and wink out of existence. The young expert on galaxies suggests 100 billion. However, the next Sloan survey announces the count of galaxies, red shifting as they leave us, past the tall, implacable, vast light cone we cannot see, but know it marks the boundaries of seeing. Doesn't it keep you up at night, this outward rush of galaxies fleeing themselves and us into the infinite arms of the multiverse? I ask. Oh, no, she answers, catching her breath. What keeps me up is our recurrent failure to know the universe before inflation, or offer quantum mechanics a foundation. It's not the future, but the hidden past. It's not what's overhead, but underneath.
Thank you once more to Emily Grossholtz. On the podcast page, you'll find a link to some of her anthologies, along with her other books. And you can find her on Twitter at ERG2R. Of course, you can find us there too at FQXI, and also write to us at podcast@fqxi.org.
If you want to try your hand at writing poetry, you'll also find a link to a poetry and cosmology course in the Rockies in July, run by Grossholtz.
That's all for today. Thank you again to Emily Grossholtz, Sorin Perowanu, Jens Eisert, and Sophie Hebden.
She's been Zia Morali.
And he's been Brendan Foster.